We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us on this edition of the program. Walker Wildman here with you, hosting the show today. I'm with you most weekdays, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at least. And Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, is with you on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So glad to have you here on the program today. We got a jam-packed edition of The Core, and you're not going to want to miss it. We'll have Chris Woodward in with us in the last segment of the program today. But until then, you have me the next two segments. We're going to break down the latest of the election. If you want an honest perspective about the next 15, 16, 17, 18 days, then that's what you're going to have here. And you're also going to get some actual statistics as far as how this election is trending and what needs to happen for things to be maintained or what needs to change for a difference to occur compared to what's going on now as far as the trend goes. Before we discuss all things 2024 election, let me cover our scripture for the week. We're in Psalm 132, looking down in verse 13. For the Lord has chosen Zion. He has desired it for his habitation. And that's fitting at all times, but it's also fitting with what's going on in Israel. And Israel just announced in recent days that they eliminated the political leader, the Hamas leader, in Gaza. One of the major Hamas leaders within Gaza, Israel neutralized him in recent days, which was a big, big milestone for the Israeli military. And we're still awaiting an Israeli retaliatory strike on Iran. We'll see how that progresses over the coming days. Our coverage of the election is going to take place live on November 5th, the evening of Election Day. We're going to have live coverage here on American Family Radio beginning at 6 p.m. Central. We're going to go late into the evening, possibly early into the wee hours of Wednesday morning, covering the election live, breaking down the results state by state. That's going to be here on American Family Radio, and we're also going to live stream the video on stream.afa.net, stream.afa.net, and on all of our AFR social media channels. So AFR Facebook, AFR X, and AFR YouTube, we're going to be live streaming the video on those social platforms as well. And of course, you can get the audio on the AFR app. So we're going to pretty much put it on all the major platforms so you can get it at your fingertips. And hopefully we'll have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, tune in throughout the evening and listen to the election coverage here on American Family Radio. So you won't want to miss that. Coming up on the evening of the election, November 5th. All things election are available at iVoterGuide.com, iVoterGuide.com, iVoterGuide.com. Last kind of housekeeping item, and then we'll jump into some of the headlines. I emceed, if you will, a panel discussion with Sandy Rios of Sandy Rios 24/7. Debbie Wuthnow of iVoter Guide, Dr. Jameson Taylor from AFA Action, Philip Jaregi from AFA Action as well, and Rick Green from Patriot Academy, and also host of The Core here. We had a discussion a couple weeks ago. We recorded it. It's AFA at Home Episode 6, and we're discussing all things election-related. What are the consequences of a Kamala Harris victory? What are the consequences of a Donald Trump victory? All of that was broken down in our latest episode of AFA at Home. So that's up now on all the major AFA social media pages and at stream.afa.net. So we're making this available for free at stream.afa.net. All you have to do is create a free account and you can watch the production there. You're going to want to watch that before Election Day, because we're talking about leading up to the election and what the consequences are, whichever direction the country goes on Election Day. Well, enough of the housekeeping items. The Real Clear Politics average is, it's an average of polls that has been kind of the go-to source for tracking election results for the last few decades. I know certainly I've been using it since 2016, and it's been around since before then. So well over a decade, Real Clear Politics has been the go-to source for aggregating all the major polling results from all of the battleground states around the country. As I said earlier in the week, the national polls are they're just not helpful. All right, they're just not helpful, because these elections come down to battleground states. It's called the Electoral College. The Democrats want to abolish the Electoral College. Tim Walz said it just the other day. They want to abolish the Electoral College. But the reality is the Electoral College is still in place. It's a critical component of our elections to make sure that the balance of power maintains is maintained fairly in our country and is not taken over by major population centers. And so the Electoral College is obviously still in place, and that's what matters when you're talking about winning national elections at the presidential level. You have to win the Electoral College. So with that being said, and we're gonna play some of the clips from Kamala Harris's interview with Bret Baier here shortly, but President Trump is up now for the first time ever this has happened, even going back to 2015, 2016. President Trump is up in seven of the seven battleground states when it comes to the Real Clear Politics average. He's up in seven of the seven. Last week, he was up in six of the seven. His best showing historically on this, it was in 2016, and he was up in two of the seven, and he won that election against Hillary Clinton. So President Trump is now up in seven of the seven states around the country when it comes to the battleground states: Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia. So that's an interesting development just out in the last 24 hours. First time ever President Trump is up in seven of the seven battleground states going into Election Day. Let's jump to this interview that Kamala Harris did with Bret Baier on Fox News. We're going to try to do our best and do this in chronological order, and then in the next segment we'll put a bow on it. But to start out, Bret Baier asked her explain why when she first realized that Joe Biden was declining from a cognitive vantage point. When did you first notice that Biden basically wasn't on his A game mentally? This is going to be clip three. Let's listen.
You call Donald Trump, he's misguided. You say now
he's unstable. He is unstable, Brett.
He's not well. You say he's mentally not stable.
He's not stable.
Let me ask you this. You told many interviewers that Joe Biden was on his game, that ran around circles on his staff. When did you first notice that President Biden's mental faculties appeared diminished?
Joe Biden, I have watched from the Oval Office to the Situation Room. And he has the judgment and the experience to do exactly what he has done in making very important decisions on behalf of the American people. Joe Biden is not on the ballot.
I understand.
And Donald Trump
But you talked about it.
And Donald Trump
after George Clooney said within a few minutes of talking to President Biden at a fundraiser that he thought this was not the same Joe Biden that we saw on the debate stage.
Donald Trump is on the ballot.
I understand. You met with him at least once a week for 3.5 years. You didn't have any concerns?
I think the American people have a concern about Donald Trump, which is why the people who know him best, including leaders of our national security community, have all spoken out, even people who worked for him in the Oval Office.
Well, there you have it. So that's Kamala Harris being questioned by Brett Baier. And by the way, anybody who watched that and wondered why does Brett Baier keep interrupting her? We're going to explain that. And there's a valid reason why he keeps inserting himself, because he's trying to get answers. He's got a litany of questions. Voters want to know, where does Kamala Harris stand on the issues? And her team signs her up for a lousy 20-minute interview. We're going to talk about that. We've got clips to back it up. But this was set up in a manner that Brett Baier was going to have a very difficult time getting actual answers on the issues of the day from Kamala Harris. Her team intentionally set Brett Baier up to basically fail at getting questions out and answers in that the voters need. But Kamala Harris completely dodges the answer there, dodges the question, won't answer when she noticed the cognitive decline of Joe Biden. And remember, the entire media establishment turned on Joe Biden within a matter of 24 to 36 hours and forced him to drop out of the race just like that in the blink of an eye. And even Nancy Pelosi turned her back on Joe Biden. Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and the rest of the crew turned their back on Joe Biden, forced him to resign. And they did it all because apparently Joe Biden's cognitive decline began to rapidly advance, and that was their excuse. That's what the media said. Well, after the fact, we realized that Joe Biden said it's because his poll numbers were bad. Now, we're getting mixed reviews here. I think it's probably a combination of both, but Biden says, well, it's because my poll numbers were bad, and we actually played that clip here on the Core. The media says it's because of his cognitive decline. So which one is it? I don't know. Probably a combination of both. But nonetheless, Kamala Harris wouldn't answer the question. Imagine that, about when she noticed President Biden's well-publicized cognitive decline in the last few months. Completely wouldn't answer that question, and actually tries to pivot to President Trump, who for 78 years old actually is on his A game, impressively so. Personally, I think his demeanor is a little bit more approachable than it was in 2020 or 2016. That's just an anecdotal assessment. President Trump seems more relaxed, more cool, more cordial with some of these hostile hosts and these hostile interviewers than even he did in past cycles. One more clip, at least this segment, and then we'll play some in the next segment. Kamala Harris was questioned about her Department of Justice's approach of how to handle political opponents and people you disagree with. And then, of course, she immediately turns it on Donald Trump. But listen to how loud she has raised her voice, how flustered she is when talking about Donald Trump supposedly going after his political opponents. Clip 5.
Talked about locking people up because they disagree with him. This is a democracy. And in a democracy, the president of the United States, in the United States of America, should be willing to be able to handle criticism without saying he'd lock people up for doing it.
Well, there you have it. That's Kamala Harris on the precipice, really, of yelling there. Because this is not a stadium setting. This is a one-on-one with Brett Baier, all right? There's no reason to yell when you're doing this interview, but she's clearly flustered there. But you notice that she tries to blame President Trump for wanting to lock up his political opponents, when in reality, it's Kamala Harris's DOJ that is currently, as we speak, locking up her political opponents. We've got example after example. It started with the January Sixers. Most of these were simple trespass charges. Maybe a few of them might have been some vandalism charges. But most of these are very minuscule, minor infractions, maybe 6 months behind bars tops, maybe a year. But they've still got all these J6ers without a trial being held in the D.C. jail. No jury yet, no trial. We're 4 years down the road. And so it actively, as we speak, the Democrats are locking up their political opponents. I've got a pro-life mom over in Alabama. I just read her story yesterday. She's going to the federal pen for 3 years for protesting outside of an abortion clinic. All right, so the Democrats and Kamala Harris are actively locking up their political opponents, and she wants to accuse Donald Trump of wanting to do the same thing. Absolutely not. That's not going to fly. It's known that the Democrats love locking up their political opponents. This is their go-to strategy to intimidate opposing voters. We'll be back in just a few.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the second segment of today's program, and we're really covering all things election 2024. We'll have Chris Woodward of American Family News here in the studio here shortly in a little bit in the next segment, and we'll break down some of the top stories from AFN, probably most of them election-related. But in the last segment, we covered the Kamala Harris interview with Bret Baier. It was an unmitigated disaster. And there's really only two reasons at this juncture, really only one, but we'll give out two. There's two plausible reasons that Kamala Harris would dare to do a sit-down interview with anyone from Fox News. And here are the two possible reasons. It could be that Kamala Harris is leading so much, and she's so confident, and she handles interviews so well, even hostile ones, that she's comfortable going into an environment that is known to be conservative at Fox News and do a sit-down interview 2 weeks out before the election. All right, that's one plausible explanation. And, of course, we know that's likely not true because Kamala Harris isn't very comfortable doing interviews, especially not hostile interviews. The other option for why on earth Kamala Harris went to Fox News and did a sit-down interview with Bret Baier is because she is underwater so much with voters in the battleground states, including Pennsylvania, that this was a last-ditch effort to reach independents and turn the election in her favor as we are really under 3 weeks out for the election. I think it was the latter. All right. When you look at all the available evidence, Kamala Harris is clearly underwater. Donald Trump is up in all seven battleground states, according to Real Clear Politics. The only reason Kamala Harris would go into an environment like Fox News, all right, is because she is underwater so much that they don't know what other options are on the table. They don't know what other options are on the table. And I believe that's the most plausible explanation. Not to mention she's been under tremendous heat for not doing sit-down interviews. But to make matters worse, this was probably one of the most disingenuous attempts at reaching over the aisle and doing a sit-down interview with a hostile media outlet, or I would say a more fair media outlet in Fox News, because Kamala Harris's team, they rigged this whole thing so that she would perform the best she could possibly perform, and she still did absolutely terrible because she wasn't providing substantive answers. And it's clear she got very frustrated when she was pressed on issues like the economy, the border, and foreign policy. And to prove my point, Bret Baier actually, after the interview, gave us kind of a glimpse behind the scenes as to how all of this played out. And Kamala Harris was about 15 minutes late. The vice president was about 15 minutes late, roughly. The interview was set to start at 5 Eastern. They were in Pennsylvania in a battleground state. And Kamala Harris doesn't walk in the door till 5:15. Bret Baier has to turn this interview around before 6 o'clock Eastern to get it on Fox News. All right, so we're talking about after the interview, you're talking about a 15 to 20 minute turnaround. And in the television world, folks, that is fast. That is fast stuff, because you're talking about editing, post-production, etc. So this was already a very tight time frame, okay? So Kamala Harris's team, they showed up 15 minutes late. But before they showed up 15 minutes late, here was the backdrop, all right? They told Bret Baier at first that he could go about 25 to 30 minutes, okay? And that was assuming they showed up on time. Show up at 5, go till 5:30, do a wrap, boom, turn it around by 6 o'clock Eastern on Fox News. Well, not only did they show up at 5:15, but when they showed up, they said, yeah, we might be able to go 20 minutes. we might be able to go 20 minutes. All right, so this entire thing was a controlled, very controlled environment and was set up in a way that there really wasn't enough time to go deep on any issue in the interview unless you want to spend the entire interview on one subject. 20 minutes in the interview arena is not very long, especially when you're talking about a presidential candidate. These segments on this show run about 15 to 17 minutes, depending on what segment you're looking at, and that flies. You hardly get into more than one or two topics in a 15 to 20 minute interview. Brett Baier just uncovered how late Kamala Harris was when he was doing kind of an after-action report on Fox News in the 6 o'clock hour. So let's listen to Brett Baier clip two.
You know, when the kicker in football, they call a timeout right before he's going to kick the field goal. They're icing the kicker. So we were supposed to start at 5 p.m. This was the time they gave us. Originally, we were going to do 25 or 30 minutes. They came in and said, well, maybe 20. So it was already getting whittled down. And then the vice president showed up about 5:15. We were pushing the envelope to be able to turn it around for the top of the 6 o'clock. So that's how it started. And I could tell when we started talking that she was going to be tough to redirect without me trying to interrupt. I did this with President Obama. At one point, I just said, Mr. President, I know you like the filibuster. I just didn't even have the chance to sometimes redirect in those ways. I had a lot of other questions.
Well, there's Brett Baier uncovering two facts here. The fact that Kamala Harris's team and the vice president herself showed up 15 minutes late to an interview that was only supposed to last 30 minutes. And then they cut down the time from 30 to 20 when they showed up. And it was very evident towards the end of the interview that Brett Baier was being flagged down by her staff. And we'll play that clip here in a little bit. But how do you... This is a ghost candidate. You know, in politics, we've talked about ghost nominees, right? These are Supreme Court or executive branch nominees that there's just not really a deep history on. Well, Vice President Harris is in many ways a ghost candidate. She's a ghost nominee. And she, in some ways, she is a ghost candidate, and in some ways, she's not. So I may be contradicting myself, but let me expound on that. So Vice President Harris really won't definitively state what her positions are. She'll say kind of what she will do and what she won't do, but it's from a very 30 to 40,000 foot level. But we know Kamala Harris's past, and this is the good thing about voters, for voters, is what we do. She does have a history. So some ghost nominees and ghost candidates, they really don't have a history at all, at least not a history that's publicly reportable. But Kamala Harris may seem like a ghost candidate as far as not being able to nail down exactly where she stands on the issues, but we can look back when she was prosecutor in San Francisco, attorney general of the state of California, senator from the state of California, candidate for U.S. president for the Democrat nominee in 2020. We can look back and we can see what were her positions at the time and what are the positions of the Biden administration? Because after all, this is the Biden-Harris administration. And the vice president herself has said that if she were to go back over the last 3.5 years, she can't think of anything that she would do different. We played the clip earlier in the week from The View. She said, you know, when questioned about what would you do different, she couldn't even make up something like, yeah, I would have beat inflation sooner. I wouldn't have allowed the border to be invaded. No. She said, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I wouldn't do anything different. I can't think of anything that I would do different than Biden. That was Kamala Harris's words. And then we've got the notorious clip from Karine Jean-Pierre at the White House podium where she beautifully stated that there is no daylight. There is no daylight between Kamala Harris and Joe Biden when it comes to their policies. I mean, they are one in the same, according to the White House. But then Kamala Harris goes out and does a speech and says, we need to turn the page. And Brett Baier actually asked her about that and she wouldn't answer the question. What do you mean turn the page? You're the one that's in charge right now. Let's turn the page. Turn the page on what? Well, let's turn the page on Donald Trump. Well, Donald Trump hadn't been in the White House the last 3.5 years. It's you that's been in the White House. So there's very mixed messaging. This is a pretty disastrous campaign. And Bobby, if you'll remind me, I need to bring in the clips after Election Day, where I just said, if Donald Trump will just kind of step back a little bit, Kamala Harris, everything she touches burns, and she this campaign will burn to the ground in due time. And we're really watching that before our very eyes. But maybe one day we'll do kind of a flashback show, bring in some old clips of the core and some predictions that I made when it comes to this campaign cycle. But that's exactly true. President Trump, he's still out there, right? He's on the campaign every day. He's doing multiple interviews, multiple speaking engagements every day. But in a sense, he's maintaining status quo, doing battleground, get out the vote efforts. And Kamala Harris's campaign is quite literally burning before our very eyes. I mean, as much as it can be, it is just the campaign is just falling apart. And there are really two things as I think about, you know, there are under 3 weeks, a little over 2 weeks before Election Day, November 5th, by the way, 2024, vote, vote, vote. If you're not planning to vote, you need to vote. If you're not registered, it's probably too late, but you need to vote. You need to be registered and you need to vote. But there are really two things that need to be watched as we head into Election Day when it comes to how does President Trump maintain what he has going, okay? The first thing is that President Trump must, and this is I'm just purely analyzing this from an opinion vantage point, all right? I'm not endorsing candidates. I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'm just telling you, as a news analyst, as an opinion talk show host, this is what needs to happen for the Trump campaign to continue their momentum and really take this to victory from an Electoral College vantage point. If Republicans can do better in early voting than they did in 2020, which isn't hard to do, right? Increase your early voting turnout amongst Republican voters between now and Election Day. If that can happen, plus maintain Election Day turnout compared to 2020 numbers, really those two things are a recipe for victory for the Republicans and the Trump campaign. So slightly, even if it's only 1, 2, 3%, increase your early voting turnout amongst the Republican Party voters and maintain your Election Day vote out, which is always historically good for Republicans. Republicans always turn out on Election Day to vote en masse. Maintain those two things. You're talking about a 2, 3, 7% vote victory in some of these battleground states for President Trump. And one other thing before we head towards the end of this segment. I think if President Trump carries the election, which 2 weeks out, things are liable to change, but I think if President Trump carries the election, I think he carries the party. All right. I don't see how President Trump does well and Republicans down ballot don't do well. I just don't see how that's the case. Maybe in a few states, maybe. But largely speaking, the media has been talking about how the Senate race in Texas is neck and neck, which I don't believe that at all. And we'll cover this after the election, and I'll tell you all the things that I told you were false and how I was right. But we'll do it in humility. I'll just go ahead and tell you right now, the Texas race is not close, okay? And if you want to say 5 percentage points is quote-unquote close, no, that's not close in the era of politics, all right, in the arena of politics. 5% is not close. It may be uncomfortable in a state like Texas. It is absolutely not considered close. 1, 2, 3% might be close, but not 5%. I don't think Ted Cruz is going to have any problem in that Senate race over in Texas. Remember they said Beto O'Rourke was going to beat Cruz, and he lost by like 5 or 7 percentage points, which is a lot, okay, considering the amount of money that is being poured into Texas to beat Ted Cruz. But I think if President Trump does well, I think he carries the Republican Party. As far as the House goes, with all the gerrymandering going on, I think the House is probably going to be pretty close. And when I say pretty close, probably within 10 to 20 seats, All right, probably within 10 to 20 seats, probably closer to 10 as opposed to 20, because these districts are so gerrymandered to where it's very difficult to flip seats. All right, very difficult to flip seats. But nonetheless, I think if President Trump does well, I think he does carry the Republican Party pretty much across the board, with the exception of maybe a few congressional districts or states when it comes to statewide office. The last thing I'll say is the Democrats, they don't know how to lose well. They don't know how to lose well. And that's something we need to be prepared for as well. One more clip. This is Brett Baier telling us how Kamala Harris's team intervened early to stop this interview. Clip 4.
Madam Vice President, and they're giving me a hard rap.
Well, I thank you for the time.
I thank you for the time.
It's good to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brett Baier saying live on the air or during the interview, Madam Vice President, your team is giving me a rap here. They're giving me a hard rap here, and we're going to have to wrap this up. All right. And when you're watching this interview, I would encourage people to watch the entire thing. It's only about 26 minutes. So it's not a lot to consume here. Not a lot really going on in the interview other than Kamala Harris not answering the questions. But towards the end, at about the 20, 21-minute mark, Brett Baier keeps turning his head away from the vice president. And that's because, according to Brett Baier, Kamala Harris's team's in the background, four people flagging down Brett Baier, telling him to wrap up the interview. I mean, he said they were flailing in the back of the room, telling Brett Baier to wrap up the interview. And so this was whoever's idea it was in the Kamala Harris campaign to send her to Brett Baier on Fox News ought to be fired yesteryear. Terrible idea. But, you know, I can't really blame them. What else are you going to do? You're underwater in every battleground state. The favorability, the unfavorability, is at about 70%. 70% of Americans think that the country's on the wrong track. And guess who's in charge? Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. We'll be back in a few.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us in our last segment of the show. If you would like to listen to the show in its entirety at any point during the week or during the day, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. AFR.net, we have the podcast available there on the AFR app on your mobile device. Just go to your app store, type in AFR or American Family Radio, find our AFR app, download it, or you can go to any podcast platform, virtually any podcast platform, and subscribe there. So whether you have an Apple device, Android, Roku, etc., and we have podcasts published on all the major podcast platforms. So At the Core, click the subscribe button and the podcast will be queued up in your library each and every day. Chris, welcome back to The Core.
Thank you. We made it again, America.
Yes, we're back, and we've got just over 2 weeks before the election. Mm-hmm. And I've been covering this the entirety of the show, so we'll continue the theme. But I want to talk about the economy and really tether it to the election, because I think it's a very noteworthy discussion, and I think it explains a lot of the voter sentiment out there.
Right.
70% of the country, technically 69% in the latest poll, think that the country is on the wrong track.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so we have Harris and Biden currently at the helm, probably Harris more than Biden because Biden doesn't know where he is. But nonetheless, 70% of the country says we're on the wrong track. I think a lot of that has to do with the economy. Maybe not all. There's probably some foreign policy stuff in there and the border. But Chris, the economy, we may be seeing some light at the end of the tunnel on the inflation front, and some kind of settling of the volatility on the market front and the jobless front claims. But Chris, we're far from pre-Biden-Harris levels of inflation, financial stability, things like that. So while things might be trending in the right direction in some categories, the consumers are still feeling it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, a box of brand name cereal, a carton of eggs, some milk, and, you know, the everyday necessities, so to speak. They're cheaper today than they were a couple of months ago, but they're still more expensive than they were a couple of years ago.
Absolutely.
And you add all those on top of the other things. We're now in that part of the year where people are starting to crank the heat and smell the dust in the vents that's on fire. But, there's gas is still expensive. There's all kinds of things. And, yeah, you might be saving a few bucks when you go to the grocery store now, but you're still spending those dollars somewhere else because of inflation and the policies from this Biden-Harris administration that caused it.
Yeah. You know, just to reminisce a little bit, I played a clip of an oil analyst. This goes back probably earlier this year or 2023. But he made the prediction that oil will never go below $80 a barrel. That was his prediction. This guy's been in the oil market his whole life. And I actually disagreed with that, and I didn't really have a lot of hard data. But oil's at 70 bucks a barrel. And to your point, it's still not at historic lows by any means.
No.
We're still well over, we're somewhere probably in the $2 to $3 a gallon range, depending on which part of the country. But nonetheless, I said I think oil can go below $80 a barrel. Now, we are at peak capacity when it comes to refining, not necessarily peak production, but peak refining capacity. But Chris, we haven't invested in our oil refining capacity in decades. I mean, we're running these arcane facilities. So if we put a little bit of money investing in our oil refining capacity, we could get oil down to 60, 50 bucks a barrel.
And that impacts everybody listening because everything you buy is brought to the store or brought to you from a place thanks to things like fossil fuels. So if you get a stable policy in place and you do it consistently for a number of years, it's gonna impact you in a more positive manner versus this every 4 years we're gonna power the country on unicorn juice like you get from from lefties. Whereas the Trump administration has been dead set on we're gonna drill, baby, drill. That's his words. And you know, we need a stable energy portfolio. We can't keep doing this every 4 years we're gonna change. That impacts the markets. It impacts trading. It impacts you at the end of the day. Because people that are responsible for bringing things you're buying are having to change all the time how they're going to bring it to you. And you can't keep doing that and compete with places like China and other places that are not doing it at the level we are trying it.
Absolutely. It's completely unstable. I mean, it's like whiplash. And the economy needs some form of consistency and reliability so that, I mean, companies' planning goes out 5, 10, 20 years. You can't keep adjusting your corporate planning policy based on which type of energy we're going to supply in our country. And nuclear's back. It's cool again. You know, the climate alarmists been bashing nuclear, saying it's dangerous. You know, we can't do it. But I read where, and I covered this in recent weeks, but some of these major AI data centers are starting to look towards nuclear.
Yes.
I think it was Amazon. One of the major data center providers is actually investing $500 million in these small nuclear reactors that are basically like portable nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
Amazon, Microsoft, and Bill Gates, of all people, to name a few.
Yeah,
because they understand that the power in nuclear, no pun intended.
Well,
is out.
It's the low carbon footprint.
Yeah, right. No carbon.
If you're concerned about climate change, nuclear power is your friend because the reaction, there's no carbon emissions there. Now, the problem that a lot of people have with it is, number one, I think we've seen way too many movies. We're scared to death of it because of what somebody on the screen told us.
I'm scared of those windmills.
They're
because
still,
when they stop, Chris.
They're still killing birds. Those
when they stop,
windmills,
everything stops.
Yeah, that's very true. Very true. And, you know, interestingly enough, we've covered this a few weeks on AFN through AP material that Fred posted. But there's been an interesting situation off the coast of New Jersey where some liberals want to have offshore wind turbines, but then you have environmental groups that have been fighting it tooth and nail. And now they're in a situation where they don't have, like, the inventory to keep up parts and all these other things. And so it's been an interesting civil war amongst people that would normally break bread with one another over something like a wind turbine out in the ocean.
Yeah, and they always, these Green New Deal plans are always the most expensive. I mean, it's just absurd. Can you imagine the cost in getting getting, you got to get conduit run out to sea, like cables and all the platforms. I mean, that you talk about flushing money down the toilet.
Well, talking about money, I mean, the reason politicians, and this goes for a number of things, not just energy, but the reason politicians have no problem spending that money is because it's not their money. It's our money.
Duly noted.
And it's endless because we're required to do it or go to jail.
Yeah.
Pay taxes, I mean.
Duly noted. So on the economy, and all of this ties in, the energy ties in very, very truly to the economy, Chris. I personally think, and some of these exit polls will show after Election Day, I still think people are disgruntled about the economy. Now, the border, Israel, Ukraine, all that stuff's a big deal. People don't want to get another, you know, 20-year, $3 trillion war. All of that's an issue. But I think consumers are still, like, skimming by, and they're still upset about the economy.
Yeah, you might go out to a restaurant today, or you might near you might be near a mall or a shopping district in your town and see people and think, oh, things are going well. Odds are they're buying on a credit card.
Absolutely.
And it's just more debt that they're piling on. They're eventually not going to have money to pay that, and they're probably going to look to the Biden-Harris administration for a credit card bailout because, hey, you're forgiving student loans. Why don't you give me some money for my Visa bill?
Exactly.
Well, and not to mention all the restaurant chains that are closing.
Oh, yeah.
Walgreens is closing,
Chapter
444 11. Stores.
Hardware stores.
7-Eleven is closing thousands of stores, literally.
Yep.
That affects the average Joe on the street because that's where they get their prescriptions and that's where they get their last minute milk, eggs, and so forth.
Yeah. Yep. We've had there's a big chain of bargain stores here that are, it's actually headquartered in Mississippi and there's a ton of locations. You know, dollar stores are even hurting in this economy. And those are the places that people would generally go to at times of high prices to get that odds and ends to help make ends meet between paychecks or whatever. And now we're even running out of those options.
Amen. Yeah. When Dollar General is hurting, which they're going to survive. Mm-hmm. I've been keeping up with their stock, but they're struggling with foot traffic.
Yeah. It's a great barometer for Main Street.
Yeah.
It really is.
So you're like high end places are filing Chapter 11, including restaurant chains. You're kind of middle of the road Walmart-ish places. They've been doing pretty well, but if you've got Dollar General struggling or dollar stores, that's a real problem because that's where you would flock, right? If kind of you're tight on money.
Yeah, and even in places like I joke here in Mississippi that one of those locations has become our state flower because we have so many locations. But when those places in the remote area start to close, that's when people are really hurting because then you've got to travel 30, 40 minutes to go to a Walmart or whatever it may be.
You're right, and that's what Bobby's talking about. When you start consolidating your options for the consumer, well, it really enables other locations to up their prices a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's not as much competition.
And you know, and then you're waiting for Elizabeth Warren to come out and say monopoly, but then she doesn't show up because she's going to TikTok about something else that's not a monopoly.
Yeah, to give cheers to her husband in the kitchen.
Not that I follow her on TikTok.
As she cooks. More, Chris.
Yes.
Speaking of the economy, mortgage rates.
Yes.
So this is important, folks. Most of you have probably seen the analysis of like where mortgage rates have to go or incomes have to go to get us back to an affordability level that we were at with Trump, okay?
Yes.
And you're talking about drastic levels of change that would need to happen either in the mortgage rate sector or in the income level category. And right now, Chris, neither of that is happening.
No. Yeah. Yesterday on our website, AFN.net, we had this story, mortgage rates on the rise again. The average rate on a 30-year mortgage in the U.S. rose for the third week in a row, reaching its highest level in 8 weeks. The rate rose to 6.44% from 6.32% last week. That's according to data from Freddie Mac. A year ago, the rate averaged 7.63. So it's better than it was a year ago, but it's going up again.
Yeah.
And the last time the average rate was this high was August 22nd when it was 6.46%. What does this mean in English? One of the presidential candidates who was just on television this week talking about her plan and how she's a new way forward. Things are not going well while she's in a position of authority now, which is why people like Bret Baier say, okay, but like you're in position of power and the other guy's polling better, you know, why people aren't choosing you. So all these things are the perfect storm for a candidate running for office claiming she's going to fix it when things are getting worse under her watch.
Yeah, this, Chris, is going to, for example, a Trump economy, right? Trump is going to have to do some pretty drastic measures, even and not just in the first month or the first year. I'm talking about the entirety of the 4 years. If he gets that, he's going to have to do some drastic measures to begin to get us back to where we were. And you're not going to bring prices. I mean, you're not going to get prices to start coming down at any rate to get us back to pre-Biden levels. But can you get interest rates down and income levels up to begin to level things out? Mm. That's the only path forward here. But that's going to take some pretty drastic stimulation, and I'm not talking about more government spending. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about tax cuts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're talking about at least a year, and that's being very optimistic. Like, let's say Trump's elected. 2025, things are not going to be hunky-dory.
Right.
They might be difficult through 2025, which, of course, the left is going to say, see, he promised all these things, and he didn't make it better. But it's going to take at least a year, maybe two.
Yeah,
and then whoever replaces him or tries to run after him in office is going to have to try to run on these things to continue them. So it's not going to be better. The reason people need to care about mortgage rates, a lot of people already own a home and they have a much better rate. So you should be thankful and praise God for that. But like, if mortgage rates are causing people not to buy homes, that means homes are not being built. That means the realtor's not making money. Because the realtor's not making money, he or she's not getting a lease on some kind of car from the car dealership down the street, which, oh, by the way, isn't selling cars because things are high or nobody wants their EVs that they have on the lot. All this stuff impacts everybody listening to my voice.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And young couples that are fresh out of college or fresh out of high school or some kind of trade school, they're having trouble getting in these houses with the down payments because, you know, you're asking them for $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 out of pocket. And unless you've been saving up or you've got, you know, family to help, which there's no shame in that. Young families are having trouble getting into houses.
Well, you know, and Vice President Harris has a plan in which she says that she's going to give people $25,000 to put towards a house. Now, that's not 10% of a home. So good luck even making that work.
Not to mention it's highly inflationary.
Well, and you know good and well that some people selling a home are just going to raise their price by $25,000, knowing the person next to them or wanting to move into their neighborhood now has $25,000.
Duly noted.
That they already paid for through their taxes.
Well, they did that with EVs too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 7,000 plus
tax
credit.
The way you do this, when we're talking specifically the housing sector, is you lower rates, and I'm not saying we have to have 1% to 2% rates, but 4% mortgage rates are reasonable, right? They're not highly inflationary. And you increase inventory. And I actually played a clip Wednesday of J.D. Vance kind of talking about how we've got 25 million illegals in our country, and they're using up our housing.
Yeah.
So we wonder why there's no inventory, because we got 25 million illegals buying and renting and leasing houses that Americans ought to be living in.
Right.
So that might help supply if we start deporting illegals. And I mean that seriously. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, folks, AFN.net, AFN.net. The next 2 weeks are going to be interesting. And vote, as it's a Christian duty to be a good steward of that which God has entrusted us. We all need to vote. We'll see you next time. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we have partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears the heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.